do these lines, I write. I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this, cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Really happy to be back, glad to be alive in these crazy, insane times, and you know, we're going to be talking all about our situation in the present day tonight here on Anti-Media Radio, and as promised, we're going to be shifting the direction of the show further into the realm of philosophy rather than just going back over the news, because hey, if you guys want to hear the news, you could just go to our website and read the news there, because we're covering it all day, every day, and our new website is going to be out in like 2 weeks. And believe me, the news,
just go to the,
all of the news that you want to read is going to be there, because we're having a whole new redesign, a whole new concept to our website. Of course, we're going to continue with our articles and stuff, but the new website is going to be like a place to get all the news you're going to need. So, you know, that's where you can find your news. But our show, we're going to still explore the news, obviously, because the news, it relates to us. You know, in many different parts of our lives, and you know, we try to decode a lot of the propaganda and stuff, but also we're trying to address some, you know, more thought-provoking issues at this point, because let's face it, we're in a uncharted territory, I guess you could say. I mean, we're in the presence of a populist uprising in the United States that is going to have various repercussions. We're in a time of stale political ideas where, you know, you've got this statist, a two-party paradigm that that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. You've got that system that's been just basically stagnant and, you know, shortchanging the U.S. public for a long time at the expense of the working class and at the enrichment of, you know, the oligarchy, which is what it's become. So we're going to be talking all about that. Let me introduce my panel. DB, what were you saying, man? What's up, dude?
I was just going to say, man, whenever you need the news, just go to Donald J. Trump Twitter account.
Hey, you know what? I was just talking about that today, in fact, with Carrie, who's going to be joining us tonight on the show, about how, you know, that's actually something for us from a independent news outlet perspective. It's kind of a good thing for us that Trump is remaining on Twitter, because it kind of levels the playing field when it comes to the access to information. Because a lot of times, like, you know, the Associated Press or Washington Post or New York Times have these like extremely deep connections that they've been cultivating for, you know, in some cases, I mean, you know, the New York Times, Washington Post, these people have been cultivating connections within the government for like over 100 years. So it's kind of hard for newcomers to go and crack into that. But with the fact that Trump's actually tweeting crap out on Twitter, as dumb or as crazy or as whatever it is, the stuff that he's saying, it's actually to our benefit, because we get equal.
Yeah, get a press pass, Nick.
Yeah, you don't need a press pass anymore. You just need a Twitter account.
No, you need a White House press pass for anti-media. It's open to you now.
Yeah, yeah, that would be nice. That would be really nice. I'm not sure that they'd let us in there, though, but no. Also joining us tonight, our longtime special guest, Jake Anderson. What's up, Jake?
Hey, not much. Just listening to the mainstream media try and backpedal on its role in all of this.
How's it going in Portland, Jake? I saw some crazy stuff going on up there.
It's going good, yeah. Weather's been nuts, and then the protest was big, and then there was actually another protest tonight, and 9 people got arrested. So I don't really know what that protest night was about, but I have a presumption that it was about anti-fascism, but who knows?
Well, you know, last night there was a protest all over the country in support of Native American rights and the whole no DAPL movement and stuff. Today there's protesting in solidarity with immigrants and immigrant rights because of, you know, the news of the wall and stuff. So this is interesting. I mean, when is the last time we've seen a president so opposed in the streets? Kerry is also joining us tonight, our awesome senior editor at the Anti-Media and writer and news personality. Kerry, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, just, you know, mourning the loss of rationality, but I think that's been going on for, like, centuries, so, if not millennia, so I guess I just got to get with it.
It's an existential threat to
rationality.
Yeah, and, you know, the debate has devolved so far that it's almost sad to see what's going on. So first, let's lead in with, I guess, maybe one of the bigger news stories of the decade, in my opinion. But for many of us, this isn't surprising at all. We've been talking about how the United States has become, like, kind of an oligarchy. It's been that way a relatively long time. But Kerry, you wrote an article today about how a new report came out, which is called the Democracy Index, and it's basically saying the U.S. has now slid from its place as a full democracy to now it's being called a flawed democracy, and it's like one spot below Uruguay or something like that, I think it was.
Japan. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So tell us about this. I mean, is the rest of the world privy to something that we're not, or at least the general public is not here in the United States?
You know, I think it's something that's international. I think it's something that's probably fundamentally wrong with democracy, because as this report comes out, as the United States is showing that maybe it's not living up to its ideals, people are losing faith in democracy all around the world, and they have every reason to. If you look across Europe, if you look across South America, people are struggling, they're suffering. They don't feel represented, and that's sort of what this survey, or not the survey, but what this analysis is getting at. You know, they look at civil liberties, they look at political culture, they look at engagement, and specifically for the U.S., what they found is that the U.S. has actually been slipping for a long time. This isn't like the U.S. slipped because Donald Trump got elected. No, this was something that has been building up because the government has been exploiting people, they've been violating civil liberties, and because people really have no faith in the institutions. So what the report was surmising was essentially that Donald Trump capitalized on all these sentiments, but he didn't even, like, he's not the reason, essentially, that these problems have been brewing for a really long time.
If Donald Trump hadn't have been elected, the outcome would have been the same. The U.S. still would have been downgraded to a flawed democracy, basically.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I find it really interesting, too, that in 2017, democracy is still what we're holding up as this ideal, when it's increasingly failing. People aren't represented. At best, you get, like, a slight majority of people who are getting their way, which is to say nothing of the rationality or validity of the policies they're advocating. And this is going on all around the world. So it's sort of like a crisis of political thought, I guess, and we're seeing it happen right now with the disputed election, where people are out in the streets protesting every day.
The tyranny of the electoral majority.
Exactly, which is so much, like, smaller than people realize, which is something Nick has talked about a lot, being that the majority of Americans did not vote in the election. They didn't vote in the primary, so it's a tiny, tiny, tiny majority that selected the ruler, and a tiny majority would have selected Hillary Clinton, too, so very few people are actually represented.
Don't forget the Democratic primary rigged, and also 7 million people voted third party.
Exactly.
I was talking to my buddy a couple nights ago, and he was basically saying, yeah, you know, it's some of the stuff Trump is doing is crazy, but, you know, his people are like super solid in their support for him and stuff. And I agreed with him on that. I think Trump does have a very rabid support. I don't know if any other word is to describe it. But what I reminded my friend about was that Trump only successfully secured about 60 million votes. And last time I checked, the United States has more than 300 million people in it, which means that Trump only got like one-fifth, like less than one-fifth of the actual popular vote if you include everybody in the United States. So really, I think one of the bigger issues here is that not only is it, as DB said, tyranny of the majority, but it's only the majority of a minority. It's really insane if you think about it, that 20% of people can cast a vote, and that somehow gives Donald Trump the power or the mandate to tell everybody else what they're going to spend their money on. That to me is kind of unbelievable.
Ironically, Trump's overreach in his impending demagoguery is making people seriously consider state rights. Stuff like CalEx, it's building steam, and that's really what we've needed all along, Nick. We've talked about it for what, 3 or 4 years already, that the beginning of people becoming self-sufficient, able to govern themselves, has to start at least to break up this massive Fed and get people back to a state's rights level.
Dude, I think that is something that is going to be talked about a lot. I personally am a believer that the idea of state secession should be definitely debated and thought about, and maybe even trying, you know, tried. Kerry, what do you think about that, about the state secession movement?
I mean, I think it's cool. I don't think it's going to solve every problem, but I think that, and again, this is something you've talked about, Nick, like the United States is way too diverse to expect a central government in Washington, D.C. to be dictating policy for 300 million people who have very different cultures throughout the country. It's cool. I mean, I'm going to support the California secession movement. We'll see what happens. I think it's a good step for decentralization, for localizing, for making sure that people have a smaller, you know, territory within to express themselves. But I think what it is for me, or like the problem that I see with democracy, or one of the problems, is that people don't vote. They don't want to vote for whatever reason. Either they can't, or they don't feel it's worth it. But whether this is at a local level or a federal level or any level, that lack of participation, I think, really speaks to the quality of the system in question. I don't vote. A lot of us don't vote. And I don't blame people for not voting, because why would they? But I think when I first got into activism, I thought I was just going to convince everybody that they had to care. And I was going to convince them to vote for Ron Paul. And everything was going to be fine. And everybody was going to be engaged. And we were going to restore the republic. And what I've learned is that you can't force people to care about these things. Like I have tried, believe me. Like, I've tried really hard to make people who are apathetic care. And some of them do, but some want nothing to do with the system. And again, that just speaks to how well it's actually working, and is just another reason why we should be looking for alternatives.
Definitely. And, you know, this, what I've been worried about, and this is really what had me kind of decide to start shifting the direction of this, of our radio show, was that, you know, the two energetic movements in this past election in 2016 was the Donald Trump movement and the Bernie Sanders movement. Now, I know Hillary Clinton wound up being the Democratic nominee, but what I'm talking about is like energetic movements. Hillary Clinton did not have an energetic movement. That's why she lost. So she lost because nobody even gave a shit. They just thought, she's a little better than Trump. Yeah, before. That's what everyone grandma's thought. Everybody else didn't show up to vote. So one big concern for me was that the two prevailing movements, and I guess the two most energetic veins of political thought in the United States right now, are embodied by Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. And I feel like both of them, as much as I think Bernie Sanders totally does give a shit, I think Bernie Sanders gives a shit. That's fine, but that doesn't mean that he's got great ideas that we should all start embracing and stuff, because I feel like these two guys, as much as they've maybe like, you know, inspired people and given people hope, that they offer a false kind of solution, because these are ideas that have been tried and failed for like a really, really long time. You know, and Bernie Sanders, of course, looking at just in the name of his philosophy, democratic socialism, he's embracing this idea of both democracy, which is an idea that's like 2,500 years old, that's repeatedly failed throughout history, and socialism, which is an idea that's a lot younger, but has also tried and has shown many, many limitations. And then Donald Trump is like this nationalist, capitalist, kind of, you know, borderline fascist, you know, let the government show the economy, you know, guide the economy and give it a bunch of rules. It's really worrisome that these are the two ideas that are prevailing, because they're stale. They're so old. I don't know. I just feel like there's not enough good ideas going around to give us a viable option.
It's only old versus new oligarchy, honestly. Like, it's seriously like the old blood bankers versus the new blood industrialists. Like, pick your king and bow down.
Yeah, dude, it's been incredible. And now the other issue here with these competing political movements within the Republican and the Democratic Party is that it also leads to this really, really bad idea of partisanship, and I really wanted to talk about tonight and really get a gauge on, you know, what people think about partisanship and what we think we can actually do about it. So first I'm going to go back to Jake and your opinion, because Jake, I know, you know, you and me come from opposite sides when it comes to the history of our political affiliations. And, you know, the last time I voted was back in 2012, and I was a Ron Paul person as well. And I know the last time you were voting for president, I think you voted for Obama, correct? If you don't want to answer, you don't have to.
I voted for Stein this time around.
Okay, this time around. Okay, before that, though, you voted for Obama.
Yeah, twice, yeah. So, yeah, you lean more libertarian, I lean more leftist.
What I want to ask you first, and we're going to go around the round table here, is, I mean, how bad have you started to notice, now that you've kind of pulled away from the whole Democrat, Republican, two-party system thing, like, how bad have you noticed this hypocrisy where people that are, like, supposedly liberals that voted for Obama pretty much kind of ignore a lot of the bad things Obama did?
Yeah.
And now, you know, the perfect example here is with conservatives, and literally last week they were against executive orders, and they thought executive orders were like presidential overreach. Oh my God, Obama's a dictator because of all these executive orders. And now Trump takes office, and his first acts of the presidency is to write a bunch of executive orders with far-reaching implications, and they're like cheering it on. I mean, what do you make of this hypocrisy?
Yeah, well, I think it's cult-like behavior, to be honest with you. I think when you're in a cult, the cult members will continually justify progressively more disturbing thoughts and behavior from their leader and from the surrounding members, and it becomes an echo chamber, and they start reinforcing the strange behavior. And so you'll notice, I think I've noticed certainly, that the people who are putting forth these you know, hypocritical platitudes that have been circulated, they're getting more and more agitated and worked up. I don't know if you guys have noticed this online. You know, Democrats that are forced to explain where the hell they were for the last 8 years, they're getting more and more worked up and defensive about it. And now that, you know, now of course they can hide behind the new uprising and the new movement. and they feel like, and that's becoming cult-like as well. On the right, they're in power, so they're kind of high off of that power. But in general, I view both parties as crime syndicates and cults, both at the same time. And yeah, I mean, it's difficult to overstate how hypocritical both the left and the right have been proven to be when it comes to a unified ideology. They're for things when it benefits their side, and then they're against it as soon as the table turns. Like you said, pretty disturbing. I only compare and I can.
Jake, sorry, we lost your reception for some reason. Derek, we're getting a little bit of audio interference from you on your end. How are you doing tonight, man? Welcome to the show. Derek Rose, what's up, dude?
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on.
So we got a little roundtable going here, and you know, I know I've seen you've been pretty vocal lately about a lot of this hypocrisy and the stuff that, you know, people really falling into this two-party system. So, you know, we're kind of talking first. We're talking about just the issue here and the problem with it. So, I mean, what do you think is the big problem with the way people are acting, are reacting to this two-party system and just the hypocrisy that we see going on between, you know, liberals and conservatives or Republicans and Democrats, whatever we want to call them, and how they really just it just blows my mind how people can pretend that their guy is doing the right thing even though their guy is doing the same exact thing the other guy was doing just a couple weeks ago, and then when the other guy did it, they would criticize that guy. I mean, what do you make of this, man?
I agree with Jake that it is like a cult in a lot of ways, and I have definitely become more vocal about it recently just because, you know, obviously now Trump's president, and it's already nauseating to see the hypocrisy, you know, what you were just talking about, just seeing people displaying the same behavior that they criticized other people for. And for me, like personally, it's been kind of a personal awakening to realize that a lot of people that I've worked with are just different people who seem to be awake or aware in different ways, whatever side of the political spectrum they're on, that they really, I don't think they really got the message, you know, that the two-party system is totally corrupt. And some of these people, maybe on the left side, they went for Bernie Sanders and then eventually to Hillary Clinton. And other people are putting all their, you know, their time and energy into Donald Trump and thinking that he's anti-establishment. But overall, it just blows my mind that people who I really thought saw through the corruption and realized, okay, we you know, we got to a new frontier. Everybody accepted that the two parties corrupt and we're not going to put our energy into that. And then people were able to sort of wake up through that because of Obama. And now here we are again, and it's just the exact opposite of Obama. Somebody coming from the right, a rich white man, basically promising to save all the people who don't like Obama from him. And I imagine in 4 to 8 years, somebody else will come along, and maybe it'll be the first transgendered presidential candidate, or the first, you know, another female attempt, or, you know, something like that to get leftists and liberals supporting. And this person will come out and promise to save the day from Trump and whatever he, you know, accomplishes or destroys. And the cycle will continue. I mean, I really have sort of a cynical view about it, because it's just, when you step back and really take note that this has been happening for some time now, and people still don't seem to have got it, you know, it's a bit frustrating and overwhelming, I think. But there's also a lot of good things happening. But yeah, the reason this is just continuing to happen, I think, is because people lack principles generally, whatever those principles are. They're sort of just motivated by a desire, a general desire to want the world to be better, but they don't really know how they want to do that or what means they are willing to pursue to get those goals. And because of this, people are sort of just swept along with different worldviews than their own, and they end up supporting politicians and systems that actually work against their goals. And oftentimes they don't even realize it, that, you know, people are just, since I've started to become more vocal the past few days, I've just had tons of people trying to debate me about, why I'm wrong about Trump or this or that, and just it really just blows my mind that people are all of a sudden willing to believe a politician's words, you know, because they still buy into this idea that he's an anti-establishment outsider candidate. And I don't know, just the fact that it was able to happen again, that now a whole other group of people from the other side of the spectrum have been duped the way the Democrats and people like Jake were with Obama once and then twice. I mean, it's just happening again now for the other side of the spectrum. So I don't know. I don't really know if there's any hope there at all.
Derek, I've really enjoyed your posts online arguing with the Trumpeters. Very, very entertaining.
I'm glad you're enjoying them.
Trumpeters, right?
Well, I know you're suffering, so I figure someone
joining that. The further right they get, they progress up to the butt trumpeters.
Oh, gosh. I think everybody has got a level of frustration right now, because I think everyone on this show, you know, we've got several people on the panel, and I know we've got a bunch of people listening. You know, a lot of us. Now, of course, we're the minority of the minority of the minority. I don't know how many percentage of people in this country are absolutely like aware of the fact that the two-party system is a counter-revolutionary kind of propaganda apparatus to keep us all in this paradigm of more or less corporate enslavement. I think maybe we make up like 1% of the entire country, probably less. So I think a lot
we're
of people.
We're the gray revolution, Nick.
A
we
lot
don't
of
see
people
the
are
black and the white.
Seriously, right? I mean, a lot of people are frustrated, but at the same time, this has led to a lot of discussions, I think, which is really good. So I want to go back to Kerry real quick, because I know you got to get going in a few minutes. These two-party people. Republicans, Democrats, the people out there marching against Trump on the weekend, not saying all of them are Democrats, but some of them, and then the people that think Trump is going to save the world, they have good intentions, right? But where are they going wrong?
Yeah, you know they do have good intentions. And I, like you said, we've all been frustrated. I've been personally frustrated because I guess now I'm a former member of the yoga community out here in Los Angeles. I got into yoga before it was an election year. That was like 2013. And everybody was all about peace and love and living the yogic principles of nonviolence and compassion. And around World 2016, and the very people, like the teachers who were preaching to their students about finding inner peace and having, you know, empathy for others, off the deep end, gone. And that's fine, because I think it's a fine line to walk, because I don't want to discourage resistance. Like, a bunch of people now are really upset and they want to be out in the streets and they want to stand up to this new government, which is the exact same old government, just with a different person in charge. And I think that's where my frustration is coming from. Because at the end of the day, these people were posting pictures of Obama saying they would miss him. And I'm really tired of criticizing Obama. Like, I don't want to have to keep talking about what this fool did when he was in power. Like, it seems redundant to have to keep talking about it. And I personally don't want to, but at the same time, I don't feel right praising these protests when many of the people are just waiting to get their party back in power. I think they're missing the point, which yeah. is what we're talking about. And I think this needs to be a time for us. And I far be it for me to know exactly how to do it. But I think the next 4 years is a good opportunity to talk to people, not about like, oh, well, look at this Republican, he's evil. But hey, look at this guy. He appointed a bunch of Goldman Sachs people, just like Obama had bankers in office, just like Obama not reinstated, but continued the corporate order. And I don't know how successful we'll be, but I think we do have an opportunity to speak to people about like inherent problems with the system. I'm sitting here with my Lysander Spooner book, and I just want to read a quote, which it's really famous. You guys all know it, I'm sure. But whether the Constitution really be one thing or another, this much is certain, that it has either authorized such a government as we have had or has been powerless to prevent it. In either case, it is unfit to exist. And I don't know how you could talk to somebody at the Donald Trump protests recently, read them this quote, and how they could disagree. Like, how could you not? When you see a tyrant in power, when you see someone that you disagree with so severely, is it time to question the system that got him elected? I think it is. I don't know if I'm the best person to explain that. I'm trying to practice patience and compassion, and I'm having as much trouble as the people who claim to care about compassion and patience and are out there screaming and calling people names. I mean, we're to the point where, like, calling someone a liberal or a Republican is like an insult. Like, it's loaded with so much vitriol, even though it's just a word, it's just a label, but people hurl it like it's like one of the dirtiest four-letter words you could possibly imagine. And I think we need to get at that.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it's beyond the two-party crap because it's all related to NDAA. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
I've been called a liberal a lot lately.
Same.
In office. Before that, I was apparently a conservative. But anyway, Carrie, just to make a point real quick, you talked about Lysander Spooner and you read that quote. What year is that quote from?
Oh my God! Hold on, let me check the publishing date. Definitely 1870. 1870, he was saying this. And this is after the Civil War, after the United States federal government allegedly came to the rescue of the slaves. And he was an abolitionist, mind you. This is someone who fought against slavery. And he still saw the inherent problems in the system. And here we are over 100 years later, and it's still completely relevant.
100 and almost 50 years later, talking about quotes from critics of the government that existed 150 years ago. That realized what was going on back then, and we're still dealing with the Republicans, Democrats, and so, Carrie.
And like five,
I know you got to get going. We're gonna have you back on the show soon. For those not familiar, follow Carrie Wedler on Facebook. She posts some great information. She's our awesome editor here at the Anti-Media.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
150 years later.
Bye, you Carrie.
You know what's ironic, Nick? It's like 5 or 6 years later, right? Like Standard Oil basically bought the government. So it was like corporate takeover then even. So that's what was crazy. They saw it in the 1870s already coming. The republic lasted like 100 years.
A republic if you can keep it. That's what they always said, right? So we're still on this topic of this two-party shit because, look, it's gotten us stuck. And we can no longer be in this paradigm where it's like, oh yeah, I'm a liberal, so let's fight against the conservatives. But once Mike gets in office, let's pretend he didn't do anything. Obama was the biggest Trojan horse that I've seen in my lifetime. Now I'm only 30 years old, but you know that's enough time to see a good amount of presidents. And Obama was a huge Trojan horse, man. Look at him. He came in under this progressive, anti-war, anti-establishment platform. He came into office. He started up wars with like six extra countries over what Bush had already done. He aggregated power into the executive branch further than any president in recent memory. And now who's taken over? Donald Trump, the borderline fascist. So all these, you know, and again, it goes back to the frustration that everybody's having. And I'm probably, you know, dealing with it as bad as anybody else, man. Like, to see the fact that my friends that are liberals and Democrats or whatever they call themselves that really didn't give two shits while Obama created an extremely, extremely powerful executive branch, all of a sudden care about a president being too strong executively, it really, really blows my mind to see the fact that people could ignore stuff just because they think that a guy is on their side. Like it really shows me that the propaganda works. And that's why we need to start bringing out new ideas, because we need to start shattering these bogus propagandistic ideas that if we just get the right guy in office, that he's going to be better, you know, than the other guy. I mean, these ideas have been the ones holding us down. I think we need brand new, fresh ideas. As I mentioned, Trump and Bernie Sanders leading the ideological, you know, binary revolution going on right now. That is not good news for the state of freedom in the United States. And I don't know anyone better to talk about the direction that we should be going in than you, Derek. I mean, dude, you have been working on your book with John Vibes, and I feel like from all the stuff that I've seen that you guys have been posting and talking about it, it seems like you guys are working on some stuff that could truly advance the people of this earth in a much better direction as far as embracing these ideas of personal individual freedom rather than these ideas of as long as it's something I agree with. So Derek, man, tell us about some stuff that maybe we can do to start maybe let's start at the very beginning. What is a good step? And you know, one thing that we brought up in the early show is the state succession movement. I mean, do you think that's even something worth looking into as far as trying to, you know, incrementally advance this idea of individual freedom?
I caught most of the, what was the last section that you said, though? What was the idea that that you were asking if I support?
I mean, like the state secessionist movement.
Okay, secession movement.
You're over in Houston, Texas. We're over here in California. Texas is going for a long time. California is now jumping on the secessionist bandwagon. I mean, is there an idea that we should think about embracing to start advancing this personal freedom movement, or what?
You know, I think it's interesting as far as the idea of secession. It's another one of those topics that's kind of sensitive because while, I mean, I definitely could find some reason to argue for separating and breaking away from the state and forming our own communities. And in a lot of ways, that is kind of what I propose as far, but in a different fashion. But you also have some of the people who... I guess just the historically, some of the people who wanted to break away for secession, they wanted to do so they could continue to be racist and have slaves and things like that. And so you're always going to have ugly or bigoted people who will also take up similar ideas. You know, when it comes to freedom and the idea that people should be free to voluntarily associate with who they choose and to, you know, try to remove the violence that government is, there's going to be people who choose to say, okay, I only want to hang out with this type of person or this type of person. And so part of that is, I think, goes along with the secession movement because some people want to break away from the U.S. because they think it's, you know, lost tradition or it's, you know, not reflecting Western values or whatever they come up with. Others, though, I think are more of the, you know, what we would consider to be kind of right-wing sovereigns who just, you know, really are just think that the government has broke away from the Constitution or just isn't serving the people, and so they want to create their own nations and such. And I mean, I think that even on the individual level, like, you know, we're talking about individual liberation, that the idea of self-liberation or neighborhood secession is an idea that I've read about as well. You know, some people promoting that idea in the past, just empowering and building within your own communities with this idea of sort of seceding from the state, becoming localized, becoming self-sustaining, and, you know, having networks of trade and food production and all these different things that can really empower a community together. And really, with some of the apps that exist today, it's even more possible, and that's one of the things we're working on in Houston. So in that way, it feels like it's possible to sort of secede from the state, not in the sense that we're going to be able to go, like, officially declare ourselves broke away from the U.S., but maybe enough in the sense that we can maintain some level of freedom and prosperity and then continue to propagate for truth and for solutions. Others in other places can find, you know, what works for them in their community. But as far as will there be some larger push for secession, there's also some who would say that it's kind of capturing, it's part of this whole thing that led to the Brexit and the European Union, that some of that same sentiment is what brought about Donald Trump's support. You know, other people think he's, like, really opposing the New World Order and fighting against them, and you know, it's really interesting. I do think that generally I support the idea of secession. Yeah, I mean, I think that it would serve each of us who value freedom to have a much smaller state to deal with rather than just this federal government of the U.S. You know, but I mean, it could get chaotic. It could definitely get interesting.
Even within the U.S., there's cultural incompatibility. What I found by moving up here to Minnesota, Nick, from California, it's a different world, man. It's a different country. People consider it that way already. They're starting to say, hey, California's just going to break off with Oregon and Washington anyway, so who the hell cares what they think? I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll go with Canada up here. I have no idea, man, but suffice to say, culture still matters to people because they like familiarity. They like comfort. Those things still count for something, and in different regions, those things just happen over history. and it's creating a rift in the U.S. It was a great experiment for a while, but possibly it's come to that natural end.
Yeah, you know, it's a very interesting thing to talk about, this union, the United States, the grand empire, whatever way we really want to describe it. It's really interesting how it's grown so big, but now it's grown so different. And I can't tell you how many times I was just reading this article that it was on Yahoo about the most recent polling numbers out of the California secessionist movement, the CalExit movement. And it was up to about one third, about 30% or so of Californians now favor secession, which is pretty intriguing to see that many people actually contemplating this idea. But I went down and I read the comments, and the first like three or four comments, the top comments on this article were people from around the United States just talking shit about California. Like, they're just a bunch of commies and a bunch of blah, 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 blah. Anyway, who cares if we lose them? They should leave. We should kick them out anyway. You know, and like literally like, what has California done to any other state?
It's super prevalent.
Besides help, we make all of your movies, we make all of the technology, and we grow like 50% of the food for the rest of the country. Why do these guys hate us so much?
It's because they're
to see that, like, I shit you not, every go and look at any article that is something like about California in like a national news organization. And look at the comments and how many people are talking shit about us. And it's so it's not just us wanting to be independent. The rest of the country doesn't really like us much anyway. So that's something that is also interesting, too, is that not only is it do I think there are secessionist movements starting to sprout up and they're going to prosper, of course, in like left-leaning states under Trump. And then under Obama, you know, the under Obama, the Texas secessionist movement got pretty big, right, Derek? I mean, I was actually seeing people out here in California that were like from Texas driving around with bumper stickers on their cars talking about like the Texas secessionist movement and stuff. And so it's a really interesting you know, phenomena, and I think you're right. It's kind of related with the Brexit movement, and it's also related to this election of Donald Trump, and it's really kind of a big time, it's like a huge rejection of basically globalism, I guess. I hate to use it because it's so cliche, but really it is. It's a big time rejection of the basic global order of things. And I think the first iteration we saw was what, you guys remember the, what was it, the Scottish independent movement, right? Was it Scotland? Am I tripping? Oh, just a couple
years
ago.
No, you're right, yeah.
So the Scottish independent movement, and then, you know, that barely didn't pass. Like, Scotland almost seceded from England. And then, so that didn't happen. But then England seceded from the European Union. And, you know, California is coming in with this nationalist government. And in all throughout Europe, nationalism is rising. Populism, I guess you would call it. And even in Japan, populism is rising. Throughout Latin America, you know, and so people are rejecting. I think the popular feeling here, the general feeling, and this you know, materialized in both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, is that people are rejecting the current order, the current, I guess you could call it the neoliberal order, right? And people are rejecting it all around, you know, all around the world. Not only that, but like within like individual states here in California and Texas, people are like, okay, let's start moving. You know, maybe we should start thinking about like receding or seceding out of the actual, you know, state itself. Now, here's the reason why I think state secession is cool, because I think the ultimate freedom is going to come from like individual secession, where like you personally actually secede from the state and it's no longer in control of you. At that point, where it's like, you know, we get to the point eventually of like complete self-government, well, then we've accomplished, you know, total freedom basically. But I think secession moves in like steps, and you know, you can only go so far at a time. And I think maybe just breaking it up. We've already got state lines. We've already got all that stuff. Breaking it up like that just seems like a like the next easiest step to go in that direction. I mean, Derek, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think, like you said, the term globalism, it's unfortunate that it's so associated with Alex Jones ranting and raving, but I think it is accurate to say that there is a, you know, a sentiment around the world of kind of rejecting globalization, globalism, whatever you want to call it, and this push for central authority, and we saw that with activists and tons of really other professionals in different fields around the world rejecting the TPP. And for a lot of reasons, including the fact that they felt like, okay, it was giving too much power to international bodies, corporate bodies. So that's itself is a rejection of this idea of a global government or international government being able to tell individual nation states or cities or, you know, communities how to live their lives. And overall, I'd say that's a good idea to reject that. Again, it's just unfortunate that some of that, along with that, is like the other extreme. I feel like movements, they, you know, we have like a general push, like, okay, it's good, let's push against these global, these people, these corporate leaders who are trying to take over the world and push for these quote-unquote trade deals so they can get richer and, you know, steal from the individual nations. So we push against that, and then the other extreme, like some people push really extreme, and they become really protectionist, or, I mean, I personally am fine with a non-interventionist, quote-unquote isolationist foreign policy, but along with the push against globalism, there's like the people who are like, yeah, so nationalism is the answer. And for me, I'm personally like, you know, I favor individualism and individual, the strength and empowered individuals, which leads to empowered communities and so on and so on. Before I support the idea of a nation state, generally, yes, I guess I would say I'd rather deal with a federal government than like a world government or something like that, but I, that doesn't mean I prefer a federal government, you know, or any government to anything else. So, you know, there's some people who are fighting against globalism because they want a strong nation state, and again, these are probably some of the same people who are saying they're trying to save Western traditional values and such. So, you know, when you're fighting for freedom, this is why, you know, I heard you guys mention here earlier about like coming from the Ron Paul movement. Like, I never voted for Ron Paul or anything like that, but I definitely had people who were on that side. I had people who supported Dennis Kucinich, and just from all sorts of parts of the spectrum, but just been able to see enough that, you know, people go into those areas looking for some sort of candidate that's going to be the rebel to push against the system and give them something to believe in. Ultimately, we know that doesn't really fix things. People become disillusioned. So when somebody like Donald Trump comes along and is talking about, you know, bringing America, making America great, people who generally are into the idea of seceding because they don't like the state America is in, they're like, oh yeah, that sounds like good, making America great. Well, I guess if America is great, you know, going to be better, then I'll support that. And people pushing against globalization in the sense of the EU, you kind of see these same sentiments tied together. The interesting aspect now, though, is we might have a reversal. This is one of the things John and I talk about in one of the chapters in our book, is just how the left and right, they become these extremes. They kind of mirror each other. They like become this polar opposite. But now we're flipping in the same way that now the left thinks WikiLeaks is a Russian operation and the right loves WikiLeaks. You know, that's a big switch from a few years ago. Now we may see where people who are typically on the left are willing to say, hey, let's secede because they hate Trump so much, you know, and typically that's kind of a right-leaning position. So again, people are not principled, so they hop all around and they don't keep a consistent position. And, you know, maybe there's though a chance for those of us, that small percentage you were talking about earlier, though, to find the people who are principled and who are looking for answers, whether it's secession or some other solution like that, and actually turn that into something, you know, seize that potential and turn it into something valuable.
That's a great point, man. And you mentioned, you know, being principled. And to me, that's probably one of the bigger issues here, because I think principally speaking, most people are pretty much like against war. They're against killing people. They're against hurting people. They're against being bad to other people, right? Most people, principally speaking, can agree with that. But when you wrap up all of this propagandized party patriotism, exceptionalism package, along with the Republican Party line and Donald Trump, people basically are willing to throw all of their principles out the window. It's like, you know what? Now that Donald Trump is bombing kids in Yemen with drone strikes, I'm not against it anymore. You know what I mean? And like, you wrap it all up into this package, and it's like, you get people to do like really bad things, dumb things, really like illogical things. It's like, why are people supporting things that they don't support? You know what I mean? It's like the most easy example for me being that I really started finding my own political grounding during the Obama administration, and seeing the fact that people were willing to, people that voted for Obama in this anti-war platform were willing to sit around and not criticize when he was bombing other countries and stuff. Like, it just, it blew my mind that the power of party allegiance is that powerful. It's just, it's so insane to me. I have a hard time like grasping onto it. Because I guess because I've never really been in a political party, you know, before I got involved with this stuff, I was completely disconnected from politics altogether. I was never a Democrat. I was never a Republican. And I just started discovering political philosophies, not from the two-party system perspective, from the outside, I guess. And so it really like lays me out to see this stuff happen. And it's so evident right now with Donald Trump. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've seen conservatives criticize executive actions and executive orders. It's like the most blatant flip from one week to the next. It's like executive orders are bad. You know, dictators use executive orders to, okay, Donald Trump's in office. Now I love executive orders. It's just, it blows my mind that people can actually do that. It's just hard to understand that it's happening. But what do you guys think causes this, dude? I mean, is the propaganda that good, or is it just part of our, is it human nature to just fall for this crap? I mean, what is it? DB, let's go to you first, dude.
There's a meme goes around, right, where they say, like, good times make weak men, and weak men create hard times create great men make good times, blah, 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 blah. So we're in the position now where a strong man comes in because we're in bad times. We really are, dude. Like, a lot of people, their heads barely above water, while we have more multi-billionaires than the rest of the world by far combined. We have a massive military that can level the entire world. And a lot of people are in student debt they'll never, ever get out of, and they'll never, ever buy a house, which means they'll never retire. So, yeah, that's what you have to look forward to. We live in a third world country for 99% of us. That's just the reality of it. And the quicker we see that, and the quicker we see that half the money goes to the military, and that if we even took a half of that, we could all get free college, all get free healthcare, and all have Social Security kick in at 65, no questions asked. That would be something to march for instead of all this divisionary bullshit.
It is interesting, the amount of money that is just flowing through here. And I was just talking about that before the show. It's like, man, dude, the government expects to take like 30% of your paycheck, and then you don't really get to know where the hell it's going for the most part. It's just, it's so ridiculous. Derek's going to have to get going, dude. I want to go back to you real quick, man, because I know you guys are getting ready to have this book available that you've been working on, and I'm looking forward to it. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, thanks for that, brother. So the book is called Manifesto of the Free Humans. John and I just wrote it a couple weeks back. I went to Maryland, where he lives, out in the woods of Maryland. It's a pretty awesome place to write a book, just kind of locked away in a cabin in the woods for a week. And we literally just sat there brainstorming and writing for about 8 to 12 hours each day. And just knocked out this book, which is the third in our series, the Conscious Resistance series. And it'll be released April 7th, officially released at the Free Your Mind Conference in Philly, freeyourmindconference.com. And then it'll be available online and all that good stuff. But the book itself is really a lot of the things that we were kind of touching on here, like trying to get past just this propaganda and trying to get people realistic solutions for trying to break away from the state and to form autonomous, empowered communities that can also connect and to form the next stage, you know, somewhere we can go and look towards instead of waiting for voting or even believing that just a full-on violent assault on the state or something is going to achieve freedom or is going to achieve anything other than a bloodbath. We focus on creation, what we can build, and to take economic power away from them. So we outline a lot of these ideas and explore some of this. Like tonight I was working on, I was editing one of the chapters right before we did this interview called The Authoritarian Right and Left, which covers about, you know, everything we just covered here on this show. So we're looking at a lot of different areas that are relevant to today. We talk about the Dakota Access Pipeline and just our perspective on that and the environment, and can people who believe in property as freedom and people who believe in property as theft or violence, can those people coexist in a future society? And a lot of those questions. And then we also outline our idea of what our ideal community would look like among, you know, free communities everywhere. So we're excited to release that. It'll be coming out in April. And we're also going to be releasing, or we're going to be starting a tour this summer. Myself, John, will be hopefully completely healed from his lymphoma by that point. And he'll be coming on the tour to talk about how he killed his cancer without chemo. And we'll be talking about freedom cells. We'll be talking about all these ideas we covered and also performing music. And so far, we've got, I think, 45 cities that we're going to hit across the U.S. And we're going to be officially announcing that tomorrow at theconsciousresistance.com/tour. There's some info up there already, but it'll be ready to promote tomorrow. So, yeah, lots of good stuff coming up, man.
Damn, dude, I'm glad to hear that you guys are showing up in, would you say, 46 cities or something? Dude.
Yeah, dude, there's so far there's been pretty good support from people who said that they'll help us organize events in their cities. So we're going to end up being on the road for 6 weeks.
Yeah, man, that sounds amazing. Derek, thanks for calling in, dude. We're going to hopefully have you back on sometime soon. Peace out, dude.
All right, thanks, brother. Talk to you soon. Peace out, everyone.
Peace out. Looking forward to the book.
Thanks, man. Peace.
So yeah, dude. You know, the conscious resistance is gonna be sick. I've got the first two parts of the series, and they're really good. So.
They're pretty mind bending because they take you down a few different alleys of some older stuff too, some older philosophies that still work forever.
History, man, and also I think they talk a little bit about that great debate between the anarcho-capitalists and the anarcho-socialists in that book, and also we're addressing some, I think, from what I've seen them talking about, again, I haven't read the book yet, but ways of addressing and bridging the gap between the two, really, I guess you would say that the main resistance is the anarchist movement, which is, of course, a very broad spectrum movement, and I would include I would wrap like libertarianism up in that, both left and right libertarianism. I would wrap it into the anarchist movement. But that's the real like ideological opposition to like the nation state, the empire, and the just global statism, whatever, you know, whatever it is that we're dealing with right now. The anarchist movement in general is kind of like the main philosophical, you know, counterbalance to that. And so I really want to explore some of these things, and that, and Derek's book is going to be looking into a lot of the arguments and, you know, ways of solving them and stuff like that. So it should be really, really interesting. That's pretty much it, man. We don't got much other news. Go on to the website, theantimedia.org. Check out the news. We got a bunch of stories coming up. And oh yeah, once again, the new website is going to be done in like 2 weeks. You guys are going to love this thing. It's going to be very interesting to see where it goes, but it's going to be something completely new, much different than what we have right now, but different, I think, in many ways to like almost all other sites too. So should be something to should be something to help hold these ideas together and promote better thinking from young people like Derek that have really good ideas. You know, this is how we fight back against Trumpism. It's not by falling into this two-party thing where it's like we just need to get Trump out of office and then everything's going to be better. It's not going to happen. That's what they've been saying since, what was it, 1870s? No, they've been saying the same stuff for a really long time.
It's going to get worse before it gets better, people, no matter who leads us.
Yeah. time to start looking around. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.